Welcome to episode 31 of All of Your Business. These are the vulnerable, authentic, and unfiltered stories of business owners whose currents raise tides that lift all of our businesses, communities, and dreams. We're excited to be back for another season of the podcast, and to kick things off, we have Tom Herring, co-founder of Benefit Corporations for Good. And now your host, Michael Jonas.
Good to see you, Tom. Thank you for doing this All of Your Business podcast.
Awesome to be here, Michael. I feel humbled. So really, really anxious to chat with you about whatever is on your mind. And hopefully your audience will find this somewhat interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. What's on my mind is always 25,000 things. So we don't have all the time in the world. But, you know, I've known you for a few years now, and I feel like I know you, but I don't really know you. I don't know a lot about your past. I don't know a lot about what you used to do before this. So can you give us, I know it's very broad, but can you kind of give us a summary of who you are and what led you to Benefit Corporations for Good?
Yeah. I'm going to try to give you a condensed version here, but my background, basically my professional life really started in the ad agency world. And I was a copywriter for several agencies, worked my way up to creative director, and did that kind of work both for agencies in Portland and in Seattle, and then opened up my own creative services firm the last part of that advertising history chapter of my life. And along the way, I met my business partner, Marianne Harmer, and she was in leadership roles in marketing and other training roles with various healthcare organizations. And I had done work with her on and off throughout my career, and we'd always respected each other. And basically, we came to the conclusion one day, you know, where everybody starts a business in Portland at a brew pub. And we talked about really wanting to do something meaningful, something with purpose, something that could really give us some juice in our third act, as we've said. And we landed initially on doing work more on the nonprofit world, and helping those businesses, you know, bringing in senior leadership thinking in terms of branding and marketing and communications. And along the way, we got introduced to the Oregon Benefit Company. And as it turns out, we felt that that was the ideal mix for us. You know, we describe a lot of times, we will tell people that are in a nonprofit world that, you know, the benefit company is kind of this beautiful blending and synthesis of both a for-profit and a nonprofit. You're in business, you know, you do need to make a profit, but you're also doing good along the way. And you, you know, you have to be certified as such that you're making, you know, progress with both the social and environmental work in your community, if not in your state, if not on a national level. And so that's kind of, that became the launch. We wrote a book called Putting Soul into Business. And then I think we met you shortly thereafter, because Rational Unicorn was one of our very first businesses we certified. And, you know, I think you were somewhere around number six, and I think we're at 61, and there's a couple more being added this week. So the story continues, but.
Yeah, no, it's great. And so, a lot of people ask, okay, well, what is a benefit company? You know, what do you say to that?
Yeah, so I think it's a real, you know, we use a real simple, you know, a real simple description. And basically, a benefit corporation is a corporation that is created to generate social and environmental good along with making a profit. You know, it's that simple. It is, as we call it, the triple bottom line, where you're concerned about making a profit, but you're also concerned about your community, people, your employees, your planet, your community. It's bringing those three things together and really, you know, not only making a difference, but making a profit at the same time. So that's the easy, description, I would say.
Yeah. And so if a small business owner says to you, you know, I'm thinking of becoming a benefit company or benefit corporation, how do you know if they're a good fit, or like what, you know, what's the process for them to go through?
Yeah. We have created on our site, Benefit Corporations for Good, what we call the sniff test. And basically there are, I think, 12 questions that a business leader can ask him or herself, answer these questions and get a framing of what you do, if you are really going to pursue this. And the idea basically is, do you have it in your blood? Do you want to do good with your community? Do you want to do good with your employees? Do you want to do good for your planet? And you're going to know the answer pretty quickly, you know. And our tests will say, you know, you've answered 9 out of, almost everybody gets that, and then they're ready to pursue. But it really is something that is in the DNA of a person, a business. It's a spirit that is there. It's been there for, you know, however long this business or this person has been around. And if you, we always advise also that if you're using this just strictly for a branding purpose, or you're doing this strictly for a public relation, don't do it. You know, you could do a lot of harm to your business. You might lose your business very quickly. The successive generations now, you know, the millennials are driving it. I just did a podcast interview with a Generation Z interviewer, and they're even more strident in terms of wanting to do business. They'll cut a business away so quickly, whether they are seeking employment or whether they're seeking a product or a service. If you don't have that and you're lying about it, that's not a good scenario. It's just not. So
sure. So by doing a certification process, instead of just saying, you know, I'm a green business or I'm a great business, the idea is to have an outside certification give you the certification instead of you just deciding to promote yourself.
Yeah. The certification, the beauty of the certification, it gives, because we're a third party standard, because the state of Oregon has seen us fit to be on their website, which is 3 other certification standards. The idea that you've been, you know, qualified for the certification helps a consumer, helps a prospective employee, helps a supply chain vendor know that this is a business that is, meeting a standard, and then continues to be recertified. Our initial founding businesses, as we call them, our first 25, helped us determine that they wanted to be recertified on an annual basis. And we've made it where it's very fair. So the idea is that this certification means something, not only to them and to their employees, but also to their stakeholders out there, their customers, their community members, to government leaders. They want to know they stand for something. And this is a good way to go about it. It's a community. The community is very like-minded, and that is something that we continue to, marvel at, seeing these relationships being developed in our own community. And, you know, why shouldn't they? Because this is the idea where, if your values are aligned and there's another business that offers a service that you need or need help with, why would you not want to go to that particular business? You know, values are very, very high, you know, and that's the people try. It's a trust, you know, it's all about trust and knowing where your values are as a business and as a leader.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people know benefit company certification through B Corps and B Corp Lab. I know you and I have discussed how it's this like maelstrom of confusing words. You know, it's kind of like the National Association of Realtors, they own the trademark to Realtor. So we have B Corps, but that's B Corp Labs. Can you kind of touch upon the confusion of that, just to give a little bit more clarity of what the terms are? Because I feel like that's very confusing for people, which is which.
Yeah, It's unfortunate. So, we always say that B Corps certification that has to occur through a nonprofit called B Lab, is the most rigorous certification available, on the planet for companies that want to pursue that high rigor, that high standard. And, B Corps certified doesn't necessarily mean you are legally incorporated as a benefit corporation. It's becoming required now. I think B Corps is requiring that after a certain period of time, that once you've been certified, if you are not already incorporated, something you know quite a bit about, Michael, if you're not incorporated as a benefit corporation, you will not be recertified. That is our understanding. And again, some of the semantics are changing. A benefit corporation really is a legal entity. And those are the businesses that we've been certified. And that basically, designation still means that you are either an S corporation or a C corporation or an LLC, but you also are able to check a box in 37 states, Oregon being one of them, that says you're also a benefit company or a benefit corporation, depending on the state. And I'll just slice that just a little bit more to help, because that's another. Yeah, so what's the difference between a benefit company and a benefit corporation? Well, there are two states right now. There are only two states that we're aware of that are benefit company states, and it's the state of Maryland and the states of Maryland and Oregon. And what happens in those states is that you are able to become a benefit corporation / benefit company if you are an S, a C, or an LLC. The other states, the other 35 states, you have to be either an S or a C to pursue that that legal entity and that designation.
Which is great, because a lot of small business owners, they have LLCs, they don't have a corporation model or corporation entity. What I wanted to know is, what are some of the things that people who are certified do to fulfill their benefit company status? So for example, you know, like, we're a law firm, so we try to be digital, we try to do seminars, maybe someone who's printing ink will have recyclable ink. Like, can you give us some tangible examples so that the people who are listening, they know that their thing may not be the same as somebody else or another kind of business, but also just hearing tangible examples, I think, makes it more real than just saying, you know, caring about the triple bottom line, for example.
Yeah. So you hit on a couple of great ones right there. So they, it's basically dealing with, quote, what falls under the people designation, what falls under the planet designation. And it's up to the business to decide this. So there is no one size fits all, but it is what is appropriate for your particular business. And I'll give you a couple examples. So on the people thing, if you're a business that is, you know, been certified, a lot of them will have the opportunity for an employee to work virtually. All right. So what does that do? Of course, that's cutting down on planet. It's making it a little more accessible for that employee. And obviously it's been, you know, teed up big time, you know, during COVID times, but there are others that have had that option for their employees for, for years. So it is, again, as I said, it's really up to that business, what is right with their employees. And a lot of people decide, as a business, they look at all those stakeholders in there and make those decisions on what is right for the business. On the planet side, so there we have one, and I think you know Karen of 1525, which is a promotions products company, but a lot of their stuff has been sourced through their supply chain that has been either recycled and regenerated, basically. That's the kind of thinking they're doing. But they also do a monthly and a quarterly idea is that they go out and they clean up various parts of downtown Portland. And they call this, it's a great name, they call it plogging. And it's kind of between picking up and jogging. And so they kind of do a little bit of a quick up, so you get a little bit of workout. But they also have to set up where a company like Nike has picked up this idea, and there are a couple businesses internationally that are doing the same idea, where they pick a Saturday morning, they offer it up to a group of, you know, whomever, and something we're actually going to do as a group here soon. I'm going to be talking about that in the next couple of days. So those are just like just a couple simple examples, Michael, of what people can do. Obviously, they know the general stuff about recycling. They make, you know, they have bike racks. There's another idea. If you have to go to a location, there's biking available. There's transit passes. And a lot of these are already becoming more passe because I think more businesses are building this virtual model. At least it's a hybrid model. You know, if people are able to work 3 days from home and work 2 days at an office, that's the kind of thinking that's going on right now. So that's really the people plant. Those are people planet ideas.
Yeah. And so I guess the question would be for you, what you think a business for good is. So like, how would you define that?
You know, I think it's really, it's truly, you know, in a business that is a true benefit company or a truly certified benefit company, is a business that is, it's in its DNA, as Marianne and I, my business partner, usually say, it's in their DNA. And that is, it's a business that wants to do good at every turn of that particular business. It's very difficult sometimes because, you know, we always say that if you're going to be a sustainable business, you also have to make a profit. Otherwise, you're not going to be in business long. But there, you answer questions about what can I do better for my employees? How can I help them? How can I help them for us to create a better product or a better service? What are some of those questions that we can answer and take care of as a company? And so the leader is constantly looking for these ideas about what is best for my community, most importantly, what is best for my employees, and, you know, what is really best for my planet right now? So those are the kinds of questions that almost all of, you know, all of the 61 businesses we've certified to date, they all have that kind of built into them. Now, one of the things that we've seen that's really interesting is that most businesses lean to one side stronger than the other. In other words, one is more environmentally focused. The other might be more social impact and social justice focused. And it's neither one is right or wrong. What we've done is we support that, but we will inform them, or at least suggest to them that here are a couple other ideas you might do to give yourself a little bit more balance in that quote triple bottom line metric that you're trying to, you know, continue to achieve at a high level.
What if someone says to you, like, shouldn't this just be how people are or how companies are? Yeah. You know, that's something that I would say, like, this is just the way we should be.
Right.
So, I mean, what's your thought on that? Is we're certifying companies for doing good, but companies should just do good.
I couldn't agree with you more, Michael. I could not agree with you more on that. I think there are many companies that are doing that are not certified. So we're not saying that certification is the end all to be all. One of the beauties, though, that you get with our community, and that's the key word, you get a community where you are able to, as I said earlier, you might work together, but you also might bounce ideas off of. There is this amazing networking effect that is going on. And both my business partner and I are somewhat surprised because we come from an older school where we used to think of networking as nothing more than kind of a schmooze fest. And it's not, that's just not true with today's generations right now. Millennials and Gen Zs both are very excited and galvanized around meeting like-minded people that have share their values, as we said earlier, and want to do work with those people. And so it's a total different, it has a total different meaning today, you know, than when we first entered this world.
And you know, I'm always like the cautiously optimistic or the dreamer and the realist. So what if I said, you know, why are the small companies doing this? You know, why isn't Cisco, who makes plastic containers for restaurants, why aren't they doing it? You know, why aren't Amazon shipping materials entirely recyclable? What would you say to that sort of thing? I mean, yeah. Not that there's an excuse of why, if I'm small, do I have to do it if the big company doesn't have to do it? But it, maybe the answer is to get the big company to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a great question. I think we're headed that way for the most part. I do think we're headed that way. I think that I ran across some amazing stats today, literally today, in a presentation that I sat in on, and I just wrote this down because I thought this might come up tonight. As a matter of fact, talking with you. But there, so Edelman is a very well-known public relations research firm that's been around for half a century, for 50 years. And they have what is called, they do an annual survey that they call their trust barometer. And it's all about how do various stakeholders look at, and particularly consumers, how do they look at businesses? And the stat that I was kind of blown away and it made me really happy today is that 57% of people that were interviewed in this, so most of them were US, but some of this might be international, are buying or boycotting brands based on the brand's position on a social or political issue. And then here's the follow-up on millennials in particular. 95% millennials would switch brands for a good cause.
Wow.
That's a pretty compelling statement. So I am betting that these larger corporations are definitely taking notice. The other thing that I saw in this particular presentation was that, granted, these are bigger companies. So this is the S&P 500. But they were saying another statistic, and this came from Yale University, did a research project on this, on large corporations. But it said it used to be that a S&P 500 company could plan to be around 57 years. 57, that's a long time. And now it's been cut to 16 years. And I think it's going to go less unless some of these larger corporations start, you know, getting the message.
Well, it makes me think of Target, who's been around, and one would like to think that if Target is continually trying to be on the pulse of social justice, that may be why Target is still relevant and still doing well.
Absolutely. No, they and here's the thing, I mentioned B Lab earlier, which is kind of the it's the main focus of the certified B Corp world. They are working diligently to go after multinational corporations. That is kind of their strategy right now, to get this all over. The big one is Dan One was a business, that is a huge, billions of dollars in that corporation, all kinds of different brands that fall under that. That's one that recently became a certified B Corp, and to have all these very small businesses, these brands that are underneath that umbrella, come aboard is a big positive sign, not only for certification, but for the triple bottom line, and that these larger corporations now are getting their religion. Here was one other one, and the same report I saw today, this is another powerful, as they're showing, the research that I was reviewing said that they looked at financial investments, and they're showing that the return now on those businesses that have a social good component in them are outperforming the non-social good businesses in the sectors. And there's some pretty significant numbers now. So people used to say, well, if I invest in a company that does nothing but, you know, environmental stuff. There's a lot of profit that I would be part of my, you know, my share report or my, you know, investment report on a quarterly. But there, people are expecting that, and they are outperforming because of that. That's the thing. So pretty exciting.
But then I say, what about Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A? Why are they doing well?
You know, that's a great question. That's a really good question. I think there are going to be some of those businesses we just don't understand that particular consumer that wants that. I don't know. My hope is that there will be a similar brand that comes in and as a competitor, and that goes away. I just think that the numbers are even just, you know, for the pure, you know, left brainers and the number crunchers out there, everything is starting to line up on this particular side of doing good in the world. Because
I guess my only guess for that would be that they'll tell you that they're values based as well, but their values are stemmed in Christian belief. So we have sort of a secular triple bottom line, and then we have we're a Christian company.
Yeah. Yeah. I it's one of those where it mystifies me, and, you know, our world is not in a particularly great place, you know, in terms of politics these days and what people are believing. But, you know, I've always been an optimist, and I got to believe that things, you know, that are shifting right now are shifting for the better. And I think it's only a matter of time before those businesses become much smaller than what they are right now, just due to, this boycotting. I mean, this boycotting, you know, this 57% is six in 10 people are boycotting a brand if they don't see that their social or political values align with their own.
Well, I was just thinking of Nabisco and that whole situation. But yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think people are demanding more. But what I wanted to talk about too is there's also this future, there's sustainability, there's what the hell is going to happen with our planet, you know, with global warming, climate change, and this and that. And I wanted to bring it back to you personally, because I know that you're a grandfather.
Yeah.
And so there's actually a tie here. Like, if we can make business or people that are polluting to actually care, then you know that your grandchild, when your grandchild is older, the planet isn't as disastrous, hopefully, or there is a continuance of the Earth. I mean, I say that sort of being funny and not being funny. It's sort of, you know, screaming, crying, and laughing all at the same time. So I guess just talk to me a little bit about that, like, for the idea that some of this business for good ties into wanting for a better future.
Yeah. Yeah.
Children, grandchildren, and so on.
Yeah. So, you know, Michael, this is totally, you're right. This has been very much on my mind since Desmond was born, my grandson, and he just turned two. And I just had this discussion. They come up and down, pretty regularly with my partner, and she and I were talking about this, and, I think there's a movement there that's going on too. So grandparents, they want their, these are progressive minded grandparents, but maybe all grandparents, I can't speak for, but at least the progressive minded grandparents that I know and that are, you know, acquaintances of mine, we're all looking for ways that how can we improve? How can we just start with, you know, cutting whatever gasoline, can we move strictly to electric? Or I have a friend who just, he and his wife in my age demos, that they've just bought an electric car, and they did a lot of commuting. It's amazing. What do we do about this the plastic problem is a really complete, horrible challenge right now. How do we do that?
We're still using styrofoam, which is shocking to me.
It is shocking. I think the strongest thing that anybody can do is you boycott those brands, you boycott those materials, and you find other ways to make do and start, you know, you got to start small. I think this is the beauty of our community, of the Benefit Corporation for Good community, is that smaller businesses have the ability to turn, you know, as opposed to quickly and make adjustments as, you know, the large corporations, the multinationals cannot. And we're 99% of the businesses, you know, that's really what it is. So I find hope in that. I find hope in the thinking, and I find hope in the, you know, the Greta Thunbergs of the world. I mean, it is amazing to see these young people. I was interviewed by a 17-year-old high school student last week that I was mentioning, who's a Gen Z, who's very smart and very compelling. And I see there, this movement is, it's strong and it's activist and it's somewhat strident. And I think in a very good way, you know, these changes, they've got to be made. And I, you know, occasionally I think, I don't want my grandson, I'm long gone. I don't want him dealing with some of the stuff that we see right now and making, you know.
Well, you know, that's the unfortunate thing about America's perpetual kicking the can down the road and slash and burn, not preventative. You know, it takes like the New York subway flooding, and it'll take bridges collapsing and fires and whatnot to actually do the things that we were talking about doing 20, 30, 40 years ago. I mean, they were talking about global warming probably 50 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And people didn't believe it, or it's like a cause for the hippie on the street. But I think when people see it real and they see it tangible, hopefully it makes them think like, yeah, this is happening. We're in it. We're not, this isn't some faraway thing that I don't have to worry about.
Yeah. You know, it's, I reminded some of my, you know, my sons who are millennials, and some of their friends, I remind them that, you know, 1970, was it 70, during Jimmy Carter's presidency, so it'd be in the, you know, mid to late 70s, he had solar panels that were on the White House. So that's, as you, to your point, that's 50 years ago, basically. To give, you know, a little bit of change. And so there has been some vision. The problem is now, you know, you have to act or else, you know.
Well, and they thought, you know, he was just a quacky peanut farmer. And
of course. Yeah. Yeah. And how wise he was, you know, really, he knew what was coming ahead. So anyway, those are things that certainly concern me. You know, I'm always, you know, I love this great quote that, you know, we use in our presentations from time to time. And I think this is really true, at least of the benefit corporations for good community. And I think there are a lot of other businesses, but particularly our own businesses, you know, that, you know, our cultural anthropologist, Margaret Mead, said that never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And I truly believe that. I truly think there is that possibility. These guys that started B-Lab and the Certified B Corps were very small at one time as well. And they're making strides. It's not fast enough, but I think we're gonna start seeing things. I think the pace is gonna quicken. I just the research, as I said, that I've talked about today.
Knock on wood that this infrastructure bill goes through.
Well, I think we desperately need that. You know, we desperately need that. And I think change is good. You know, change is good, and it is, and hopefully it's change for the better.
Well, and I think they're finally seeing, and I say there as in politicians and big business, they're finally seeing this interplay between social justice, environment, shifting of consumer opinion, which is what you were talking about.
Yes.
There's no longer an ability to just be ostrich in the sand and not come up with either a social justice or environmental policy, hopefully one you follow as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I think it's, be forewarned, you know, your business life is, in jeopardy without taking a stand. And, you know, we always say, but you know, this is another great line, you know, people always want to know what you stand for. Well, now younger generations have amended that just slightly, where it says people want to know what you stand up for, you know, where are you doing? And, There's this accountability thing. I think, you know, there's a lot of people are saying that the, you know, extended unemployment benefits, et cetera, during the pandemic, have made a lot of people want to stay home and they don't want to work. I don't think that's the, I truly don't believe that's the case. I think that these, a lot of the people that are looking, particularly anybody under 40, younger generations, they're looking for a business that is the right fit, that gives, that is purpose-driven, that has purpose-driven leadership, that has got those policies and those practices in place where they can go in and they can feel they're not only contributing, but they feel good about the company that they're working for.
Well, in a lot of the businesses, they talk about paying higher wages, but some of those are just the wages that should have been paid the entire time long ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Lots of research on, you know, millennials would jump from a job that just pays them. They would even, there's even, you know, some research that's indicating that they would take a cut in pay if that particular business has that purpose-driven model based, you know, on their research and what they know about it. So they do their due diligence, you know, their due diligence is done on these. That's a big decision. So those are all the hope. I grab onto a lot of hope right now. And I think that's a very positive sign.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's needed, right? Especially during literally everything going on. I mean, COVID, racial unrest, fires, flooding. That's what's needed. So I wanted to dig a little deeper. So
yeah.
I kind of want to know, you know, what from your childhood makes you who you are today? So, you know, did you have parents who were really horrible people and you decided to do better? Or did you have parents who were warm and said, you know, hey, Tom, when you get older, embark on this journey of making life great? You know, like where do you come from? Tell us more about that.
That's a great, you know, it's ironic that literally 45, let's see, we've been on a little bit. So an hour ago, I was talking to my cousin in Sydney. She lives in Australia, she and her husband. Actually, Queensland, which is north. I have a friend in Sydney. And we were just talking about our childhood, and her father and my mother were siblings and very tight. And we were just saying, Michael, that we are so privileged to have the parents that we had. Because my parents, my dad was a career school teacher. He was the last, I think, of a generation that taught for over 40 years.
Oh.
And my mother was stayed home. You know, mom took care of my brother and I. But where we got that exposure was really my parents led by example of what doing good for your community, what doing good for your planet was all about. You know, I got some of that through scouts. I got some of that through school groups I was part of. But what I really got was more from my parents, where throughout their lives, even after my dad retired, they were more active, I think, than they were ever were in terms of doing good for their community. And that it was everything from, you know, serving, helping out the Oregon Food Bank. They worked through their church on a lot of social impact issues. My mother was very pro and a real strong advocate for LGBTQ issues. My dad would volunteer to help out with CASA. I mean, there's just so many. So again, I'm lucky, you know, to have that exposure. So it's always been that fabric has always been part of my life, you know, how you do better and how can I serve my community and how can I keep thinking about myself at this particular issue and what can I do? And so part of what that's led to that I don't know if you know much about this, but this is part of my personal life. I've been really involved in homelessness issues for the past 7 to 8 years. And that's manifested in helping cook and serve meals to a group that is still meeting under the Hawthorne Bridge, a group of, you know, up to 200 meals through an organization I'm part of. Another one is through an alliance, and there are 14 faith-based communities called the Interfaith Alliance on Poverty. I've been the chair of the advocacy committee from the start of that, and we're coming up on our 5th year anniversary. I feel very strongly about helping on those issues, on whatever I can do, because I've been given so much privilege. How can I get back? How can I advocate? How can I assist? How can I boost whatever I can do? So that's kind of how it's played out, recently in my ability to do some service for my community and feeling grateful that I can help in that manner. And that'll continue, for the rest of my life. It's just something that's very important to me. Some of it means, advocating in front of the state legislature or my state representative, or going to City Hall about housing issues, and advocating for bonds that are going to help. So these are, of course, huge, complex problems that we'd only have just in Portland, but it is all over the country right now. And I think Portland gets kind of blown out of proportion. It's just as bad in Seattle or San Diego or, San Francisco. It's inland. But these are the things that at least I think make me the ability to do this public service, this, being part of something that's far bigger than me, just however I can help contribute in some small way, gives me a feeling of that contribution makes me feel good, keeps me moving, keeps me hopeful. That's a key word.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And thanks for the community work that you're doing. And
yeah,
I'm sure those are also really grounding things too, because, we're often, you and I both do community things, but we're often on Zoom calls and meetings and things like that. But there's a moment where someone just needs a sandwich, or someone just needs a glass of water or a shower. Those aren't always things that we're talking about on a call, or there's bureaucratic red tape that people have to get through in order to give out that sandwich or that water. So that's something that I'm sort of constantly thinking about, is how do we do social justice? How do we do mutual aid and community related things, but follow I am part of the man, right? Like I'm a business attorney with a law degree and now an MBA, but my whole goal is to be there to figure out how we can get through that and do the things that they're telling us that we can't do. But I think it's interesting because you have the administration part, being the chair of something, and then you have just you and someone under the bridge who's hungry.
Yeah.
And for you, what's your thought on that? Like how do those worlds collide? Like the higher level admin with this is someone in front of me who, one, needs to be treated like a person, and two, needs to eat a sandwich.
Yeah, no, that's a question I've recently been asking myself, because I think the most satisfaction I got through this phase of my life is there's something about direct service, about being able to talk to a homeless man or woman, just to dignify them at least by acknowledging that they're a human being. We're all on the same planet. We're all in the same orbit. I could be there in a minute. I could have a medical catastrophe in that. I mean, we all could. So there is something, Marianne and I have talked about this, and she feels very gratified the same way. There's something about our need to be that more direct, whatever, face or, companion, person that, we met on the street, how we can help them and talk to them and dignify them. I always used to come back from these. I'm not doing much of that right now. I do need to rebalance it. It's this thought I had, but I always remember coming back and talking with my family or talking with my partner about somebody I met that particular day and how painful it is to know that they're in this scenario and they've done so much good in the world. There's a lot of veterans, and I have a massive amount of compassion for veterans. And I can get started on go down another rabbit hole in terms of what I think our government has done and how unjust things have been for these men and women that have gone and served in some of the most horrific places in the world and the memories they have. Anyway, there is something gratifying about having that ability to connect one-to-one. I do like that's part of, I think, who I am. And I enjoy, you know, I enjoy being able to do that face-to-face. Part of the policy development, the admin thing, it's good too, because we're trying to help something upstream, but I like them both. And a lot of people can do just one or the other. And I think as long as I see that we're moving the needle in the right direction, that we're helping in some, and I always say, how can we move just, you know, an inch ahead today? You know, I'm not asking for a mile. I'm not asking for 100 miles, which is what we need, but just an inch. How do we do that? It is always the question I ask at the end of any of these activities that I've been part of, you know, and have I done that, you know, and have I helped do that?
Yeah, I think that's great. And, you know, there's often a lot of talking and not action, or there's multiple groups doing the same thing and then they butt heads. You know, so there's all this minutia of administrative sort of meetings on meetings, processes on processes. So you're absolutely right. I mean, both are needed. You need strong policy and forward moving legislation, but you also need, okay, who is there realizing that these are not just numbers? These are people with stories. These are people who have needs, you know, whether it's hunger or, as you said, I think that's great, dignifying a person, letting them know that you see them, not just see them visually, but you see them as in terms of where they are, you meet them where they're at, you give them access to what they need. Yeah, I think that both are really important. And that's interesting that you commented on some people do one or the other, some people do both. Hopefully the people who are good at that thing are doing that thing.
Yeah, and I think that's the case for the most part. I do see that more often than not. And what I think I'm really encouraged by on this subject of just what can we do for our community? How can we help our fellow, you know, man, our fellow women out there? And that is just doing, they're very passionate about helping in whatever way they can, about connecting. And one of the great pieces of wisdom I got, and I have listened to some, we have some outstanding nonprofit leaders in this particular community. Outstanding. I mean, just I'm blown away. They're the smartest people always in the room. They're the most humble, and they're passionate beyond belief. And what I've heard, though, is something similar to what I mentioned earlier, that the most important thing you can do, if you can't give money, if you can't whatever, that's not as important. The important thing is to just what I've slowly learned is to dignify that individual. They're human just like us. There's such a fine line between where they are and where we are right now. It could shift, as I said earlier, so quickly.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, you lose a job, you have a medical expense, you're with someone, they leave you, or you leave them. I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, literally, and that's the thing too, is there's this sort of concept that everyone on the street is either, you know, schizophrenic or alcoholic, or there, I have met people who are professors. I have met people who have worked in marketing departments, and you miss, you know, one paycheck, or you have one bill you don't expect, and you can easily end up on the street.
Yeah. Yeah. I recently had, I had a beer with a good friend of mine who I've known a long time. Have not seen him in many years, and a very smart guy. And he was sharing with me that he had had a bout of homelessness where he was couch surfing family members, friends. And this was a very educated, had a very decorative career, you know. And as you said, it just, we're just a sliver. It can happen to anybody very quickly. You know, one medical bill, one relationship failure, whatever that can do,
I really like what you said too, about how, you don't expect, I don't know if it was 100 inches or 100 miles, but you expect, you know, 1 inch a day just to have progress going on. Cause that often frustrates me is, there's this progressive off, right? This purity progressiveness where there's a Winston Churchill quote, which is like, I think it's perfection is the enemy of progress. So basically everyone's trying to get like the perfect thing. Everybody just sits there and everybody thinks that they have the right plan. Well, the people that need to be helped are kind of like, well, we can't wait for you to figure out what this plan is. So the ideal would be to just take part of that plan and do the thing that y'all agree on, or to just try something to push this forward. But I like the idea of what you're saying is progress takes time. And I'm thinking of, you know, Barack Obama, when he talked about the arc of justice and how the arc bends different ways and how, you know, sometimes it bends far, but it bends back slightly and then it bends back again. And there's this sort of continual social justice has to be maintained. And I just went to an event where in the program, it said, you know, equity is a verb. I thought that was really powerful that, you know, it's, this is work that is real work that has to continually be done. It's not just putting out a statement or doing one thing or giving, you know, people need sustaining help. They need programs. They need, so I think that we also have part of our society that's very quick to be like, I donated a blanket, I'm done. And that's great. We appreciate your blanket. But do you understand why the people are there that need it? Are you supporting the policies that will help them? So yeah. there's a deeper dig that I think that needs to happen in social justice.
Right, right. And, you know, Michael, that I have to remind myself, you know, from time to time that this problem, this didn't crop up in the last 2 or 5 or 10 years. Even. I mean, this started back, this goes back to Reagan's administration when he cut out funding for state mental hospitals. And it just, so you got 4 decades. We're not going to solve this in a week, a month, or a year. It's going to take a continued effort. It's going to take a while. But again, as I said, I just want to measure what we're doing. If there's just a small metric that gives me just a sliver more of hope, you know, that we're moving along a little bit. And listen, I'll be honest, I get fatigued.
That's what I was going to ask you about. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a board meeting with this group last week, and there are some really brilliant, hardworking, passionate men and women that are involved in this particular organization. And they were talking about this happened to get onto the issue of just the litter, the sheer amount of litter now that our streets are seeing, and how, and these are good people and they're very non-judgmental people, and there are things that, you know, it's just, it builds, and you have to find a way to say, you know, we are making progress, and you got to find out where that metric is and strive for it. But it's tough. It is. It's very tough.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, this certification through your company, it's exciting because it gives you your own way to do that through your business. Because as a small business owner, I don't know if anybody, but, you know, it's a day and night thing, right? Like, so if you can implement positive social justice related or values driven practices into your business, it doesn't mean you have to have a separate thing on the side. I mean, you're sort of intertwining your values with all the things you're doing for your profit or for your career.
Dead on. And I didn't really see that until, you know, until about the last 2 years. I said, you know, both my personal life and my professional life right now, where I'm putting my heart the most into are parallel tracks, really. I see so much good that small, you know, these small businesses are doing right now. And it's so, you know, part of being an Oregon benefit company or a benefit corporation is you have to write an annual benefit report. You and I know a little bit about that. And that's on an annual basis. How have you improved, or as the state language goes, how have you met positive material impact on your community and your environment in addition to making a profit? And you spell that out. And I see these reports because we remind them when their year's up. what they've written. And it can be, it's up to the company how that, we have a real basic given outline of some ideas on how to do it, but they take it a full step further. Such impressive work people are doing, you know, both in their business and outside of their business. I mean, it gives me back again, you know, back to that word hope, it gives me a tremendous amount of optimism going forward. So we need all we can get. We need all that. We need those kinds of those businesses. We need those kind of leaders. We can't have enough of them. That's just the way I look at it right now. You know, we just can't have enough of them. And they're a great start. They're going to get more powerful in terms of this, these connections and these relationships that are being built. And I'm very optimistic about the future with these particular businesses. And it gives me great, you know, great passion about what they're doing. I love getting behind them. And I, you know, however I can help promote. But again, this whole idea of being a business that is not only, you know, making a profit, but making a difference, this idea is very compelling. And I think so right for our time right now.
Yeah, definitely. I 100% believe that. So every podcast at the end, I have five questions. The questions have changed a little bit because it's kind of a new season. I mean, we number the podcasts, but this is, you're the first of you know, 10 new episodes. So the questions are a little bit different. So the first question is, what's a quote or mantra that you live by?
Let's see. I ask myself every night before I fall asleep. There's tremendous quotes. I love the Margaret Mead quote that I told you about earlier. But the one I ask is, have I done my best today with whatever has been involved? Have I done my best with my partner? Have I done my best with my business? Have I done my best with my grandson, if he's here? Have I done my best for my community? That's it. Have I done my best? And sometimes I can't.
Is that rhetorical, or do you answer yes or no? Or
yeah, it's more rhetorical. But sometimes I will get into a yes or no depending on my mood. So yeah, have I done my best? Yeah.
What's your favorite childhood memory?
Wow. Boy, there are a lot. I have some really good ones. I'm going to tell you, because this has been on my mind, and it might, if you ask me this next week, it might change. But the one that I really love is, so my parents were great campers. So they loved to, you know, do car camping. Didn't do a lot of backpack, but did car camping. But I remember, and because it's the time of year and we just passed it, is that usually in August, we would go on our family vacation. And I remember two times, but the first visit to Wallowa Lake, which is on the east side of the state, there's a beautiful campground. There's Wallowa Lake there. And there was something magical about the weather, the environment. I was probably in the sixth grade, I'm going to say, somewhere around there. And my folks taking us over there, letting us just get a taste of that, you know, that they call, you know, the Wallows have been called like the Swiss Alps of North America. I mean, there is this absolutely pristine beauty. So that's the great feeling. It was just that particular trip that was pretty awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is a failure or a mistake that you made that actually turned out for the best?
No. What was a failure or mistake? So I think this, I mean, there's probably a lot. I could write three books probably on that. Like, but the one I'll tell you what, what's really relevant to our conversation is, I will say that this has to do with Marianne and I, when we landed where we were pursuing, as I said earlier in our interview about our pursuit of really helping nonprofits, finding the Oregon Benefit Company along the line, and it was just absolutely happenstance that Marianne went to a meetup. She talked about it. We met our friend at the state, Ruth Miles, who's no longer there, but was a good friend. Everything became serendipitous at that particular point. So I'm going to use that right now. Yeah.
Excellent. And the next one is, what issue or issues keep you up at night?
Oh boy, that's a lot.
These are new questions. So, you know, you're the first guinea pig for this.
As I mentioned, I had this conversation with my cousin in Australia, an hour ago, and we both got into it because she's a very progressive. She's been progressive forever as I have. And, I worry about our country. I worry about what kind of place my grandson's going to inherit. I worry about the climate right now. I'm really scared about that. I worry about the political divide. I worry about the economy. It just seems out of control. I mean, it's kind of the who's who, I think, of that list is, I do worry about a lot of things that, yeah.
Well, there's another question that's more fun. Who is your favorite pop star and who is your favorite band?
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. So there are two that I think of a lot and one's probably, I can flip on them and they're two different eras, but they're two bands that I love. So what's very topical right now is the Rolling Stones. All right. I've been an absolute fan of the Stones since I was 12, I think, 13.
And they're still dancing.
And Charlie Watts' death, they're an amazing band, they're amazing testimony to just longevity. But then I also, and I've seen, I've seen the Stones in concert, but I've seen the Dave Matthews Band multiple times, close to double digits. And I love the work that they've done as a band, and they're totally different sounds, but those are, Dave Matthews, talk about a guy that is a very social justice focused person who does a tremendous amount, uses the gift that he's been given. It reminds me of that quote. I can't remember if this is actually biblical scripture or somewhere else, but, to those, what does it go? To those who have, who's been given much, much is expected in return, that concept. And I think he's done some tremendous things like that.
Absolutely.
Very, very much. Very much social justice for sure. And I think environmental as well. So I've had the privilege of seeing him three times up at the Gorge Amphitheater. So that was pretty amazing.
Yeah. I just read that story about him. So he does obviously larger macro type things, but there was a couple who was stopped on the side of the road on the way to his concert and he actually helped them out.
See, I'm not surprised at all. Yeah. Yeah. He is an awesome human being. Great guy.
And then, the last thing is not really a question, but it's for you to give a shout out. So who in the community do you think is either doing a good job, needs to be supported, is a company or organization you want people to know about?
Oh boy. I find it hard not to mention our community. I think there's so many good businesses in that community. And if people really want to see what I'm talking about, they can go to our website and click on the community page, including your business, Michael. I mean, you're doing amazing work and you inspire the two of us. That's for sure with your energy. Kind of wish we had a little more of that, but I think those days where I do feel a little, negative, if I've had that kind of thought process at the end of the day, which I explained earlier. I like going in the morning and opening up, booting up my computer and looking at that particular page and sometimes going to some of the benefit reports that have been done because they're really doing good things. And it's where I get juice and I get optimistic about this community and every one of them. I mean, there's so many good, I can't single out one, but there's so many. So yeah.
That, well, I appreciate that. I didn't pay you to say that.
So. I know you did, but it's so it's the truth.
You know? Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, it's a labor of love. So this is just kind of like what you were saying. I mean, this is just who I am. So if I can do business this way, I might as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How can people find you? You know, yes. You mentioned your website. Give your information to the listeners.
Yeah, so you can find me at benefitcorporations, that's plural, for good.com, and you'll see the contact page, and it comes to me. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. And I think if you need to get a hold of me by phone, I think my phone's on that particular thing too, but that's probably the fastest way as the email goes. One thing I'd like to just offer anybody that's listening to this that wants a little more information, I'm more than happy to offer a copy of our book, Putting Soul into Business, how the Benefit Corporation is Transforming America for Good. A digital copy, if they want to email me there, I'm more than happy to send them a copy of that, because I think it does tell a little bit more about the process, and it's very small business focused, which is where we are and where we will remain. So yeah, that's the best way.
Well, thank you for doing this podcast. Thank you for the work that you do for the community. And honestly, thank you for being my friend. I know that sounds kind of cheesy, but it's absolutely true. I appreciate our friendship tremendously.
That goes both ways, Michael. I'm really honored to be part of this good work you're doing here on your podcast. So yeah, we look forward to seeing you soon.
Have a great night. Thank you, Tom.
You as well. Take care.
A very big thank you to Tom Herring of Benefit Corporations for Good for joining us on this episode of the podcast. To find out more about Benefit Corporations for Good, visit benefitcorporationsforgood.com and follow them on all social media platforms. And we want to thank you, our listeners, for checking out this episode of the show. Be sure not to miss any of our future guests by subscribing to the podcast on your favorite streaming service. For all of our previous episodes, custom gear, and contact information, visit us at allofyourbusinesspodcast.com.